Warning, it would take a lot more than Orbit's chewing gum to keep these guys from saying fuck.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Unisom, the official sleeping pill of the Old Testament. Were you tricked by an old book into being sober all the time? Not allowed to jerk off and go to bed like a normal person? Is some arbitrary rule keeping you from fucking your neighbor's wife? Well then try Unisom, the soporific power of 150 awful poems concentrated into a single pill. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
Where the Obama administration has been waging a war against people of the Christian faith. It's not covered in the mainstream media. It's covered here at Fox News Channel.
Hey, y'all, I'm Bobby C. from the No Religion Required podcast, and we did, in fact, evolve from Filthy Monkey Man.
It's May 8th.
And believe it or not, when black people play golf, they're great chippers.
I'm no illusion.
I'm Heath Enright, and from Desegregated Golf Club, New York, New York.
And Deep Fat Friars Club, Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
In this week's episode, California students deny the Holocaust and support their thesis with examples of Jews.
We'll knock out a whole episode in less time than it takes for an Oklahoman felon to die of a lethal injection.
And theologians are still stumped by issues surrounding pre-op tranny weddings.
But first, the diatribe. Alright, so I'm going to do my level best tonight not to just say ReasonCon over and over again for 30 minutes, because damn, what a good time. Holy shit. All in one weekend, I get my first chance to hang out with our listeners. I get my first chance to hang out with other atheist podcasters. I get my ass handed to me in a debate with Tracy Harris. I get a private lecture on Hitler's tabletop monologues from Dr. Richard Carrier. And I get to make masturbation jokes at the expense of a former pastor while he's in the room. But, you know, I don't want to make it seem like the whole weekend was all open bars, captivating conversations, hedonistic debauchery, and brilliant lectures, because there was way more to it than just that. I got something while I was there that I've never gotten before and really needed and probably couldn't have gotten anywhere else. See, I was lucky when it came to religion. My parents were nominally religious, but they were okay with me exploring spirituality in any wacky way I chose. You know, I guess I got beat up a few times for being a devil worshipper, and I got ostracized by a few teachers for standing up for the First Amendment here and there, but by and large, I got through life with no religious scars. I started this podcast because religion annoys me and it's bullshit, but that's all it was for me. It was an intellectual annoyance. And yes, I am very aware of the real victims of religion. I'm aware of the oppressed women, the abused kids, the sexually dysfunctional adults, the estranged children, the suicidal gays, the destitute marks, but I've never met them in person. I've never spoken with them. But this weekend I met Phoebe, an amazing young woman who's somehow filled with confidence and strength despite spending the first part of her life being dragged from one sexist cult to another. I met Derek, whose mother hasn't returned a message from him in years because she's so ashamed she raised an atheist. I met Chris, who spent years contemplating suicide because he couldn't stop jerking off. I met Ryan, whose stepfather couldn't possibly have been abusing him and his brother the way he claimed because his stepfather was a good Christian man. But yeah, okay, so yes, these are extreme examples, but the crimes of religion don't have to be so grandiose to be crimes, because I also met Ben. And Ben was a well-adjusted, super bright dude that almost gave up on his chemistry major to pursue a career in pretending that Space Jesus was for real. Now, he thought better of it, but he told me about a friend of his who didn't. A bright, promising mind foregoing scientific advancement in favor of promoting ignorance. You know, don't get me wrong here. I don't think pursuing theology or biblical studies is necessarily a waste. I mean, like I said, I met Richard Carrier this weekend, and I'm damn glad he's devoted his brilliance to examining the Bible. Every pursuit has value as long as the pursuit itself is honest. But what is the societal cost when intelligent people devote themselves to perpetuating a lie? How many chemists do we lose? How many doctors or biologists or engineers never get to do anything useful because they're busy turning crackers into zombified Jew flesh? You know, every college degree in divinity is a college degree in not something else. Every church has taken up space that could be used for a not church. Every pastor who pounds a pulpit could have spent that time hammering a fucking nail. It's silly to pretend that society doesn't pay for this shit. Every time you see a really nice church surrounded by really shitty houses, you're looking at the societal cost. Every time you see a wealthy preacher standing next to a struggling teacher, you're looking at the societal costs. And if you feel like you've seen it so many times that your eyes have just grown numb to it, here's a suggestion. Go to an atheist convention and start listening to the stories. Believe me, that will reopen your eyes.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is escaped reason convict Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to regale us with some tales from the event?
All right, ReasonCon in Hickory, North Carolina, the real deal. I mean, plenty of free-range, locally sourced hickory-smoked baby bacon for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Best pork straight from the stork. Godless bitches, damn right. Seriously, though, big thanks to everyone involved, including the dedicated, talented, and hilarious hosts of Atheists on Air, Cash and Love.
Here, here. And along with Gene and everybody else from Hickory Humanists, it was a phenomenally awesome time, which was good. Because I needed all the pre-existing good mood I could get when I woke up Monday and read our lead story for the week.
Yeah.
All right, so normally I try to write some witty headline to describe it or something, but I really don't think I could do better than Andy Borowitz from The New Yorker. So in our lead story tonight, in landmark decision, Supreme Court strikes down main reason country was started.
Or in other words, Robert's Court digs up James Madison's grave and shits directly into his mouth.
And, of course, what we're talking about here is the controversial 5-4 decision that upheld the right of the town of Greece, New York, to wrap the Bill of Rights around a pile of dog shit, light it on fire, and leave it on some old dude's porch to see if he'd stomp it out.
He did.
Yes. Writing the majority, old man in question, Anthony, what the fuck ever happened to you, you bumbling tit Kennedy said,
right.
And I'm paraphrasing here, fuck the First Amendment. Why y'all keep bringing up old shit?
Can't local politicians in Greece, New York, just pray for their job to matter in the car before they walk
yes!
into these meetings? That's
right.
Literally the trade-off we're talking about here.
That's it.
We have to either scrap the First Amendment or we've got to ask people to shit before the meeting.
Right.
And we went with diapers in the meeting. That's the decision we made.
In the aftermath of this decision, the American Humanist Association announced a program that's going to help train people to give secular invocations at these meetings, while the Freedom From Religion Foundation has offered a reward to the person who gives the best one. Because let's face it, if we were supplicant, we'd be religious.
Absolutely. And from the most dangerous game theory file, one of Oklahoma's tax-paid executioners botched a routine Iocane powder procedure, some sort of switcheroo, and witnesses were forced to see that awkward, prolonged death seizure look on the perp's face for about 20 minutes. Now, this is why atheists only murder unborn children. No eye contact. That awkward eye contact is the worst.
Yeah, don't you hate it when state-sponsored barbarism gets barbaric? You know, if the two terms weren't mutually exclusive, I'd suggest we execute prisoners like a civilized society.
What? So I guess in order to avoid bureaucratic ineptitude like this in the future, but keeping in mind they still want to continue murdering people, many Republican Christians are calling for privatization of the capital punishment industry, making it more efficient and profitable at the same time.
What could go wrong?
Or instead of no-bid contracts for domestic vigilante Halliburton death squads, we could realize that capital punishment costs taxpayers more than life in prison, and also murder is probably wrong, just no matter what, secularly.
And in defrock 'em in the ass news tonight, the Vatican has finally released details on exactly how they've disciplined priests accused of child rape and torture.
Really?
Now, before we get to the sanctions in question, I'd like to point out that they did so while being questioned by the UN committee that monitors the implementation of the UN Treaty Against Torture. So for all the assholes that email me and message me and tell me, stop calling it torture, that's hyperbolic. Fuck you. It absolutely is torture. It's torture of the worst kind, and the people doing the torturing no longer dispute this fact. So stop standing up for child torturing rapists, you fucks.
There's got to be a few awkward moments at this thing. You know? So this last part's just a formality, guys. Embarrassed to even ask, but it's our last checkbox here. You guys keep the pedophiles away from kids after you find out, right? I mean, you're not still setting them up with jobs as Chuck E. Cheese bathroom attendants, right? Doing that would be ridiculous to continue.
Yeah. If we didn't know you better, we wouldn't have to ask. But and in 63% of the respondents say, news tonight, a new study finds that evangelicals are still stunningly stupid.
Stunningly?
Retraction. A new survey finds that they're still stupid. The survey was by the Associated Press, and it looked into America's willingness to accept established, fully demonstrated scientific facts, and to the surprise of nobody, we flunked miserably. The survey shows the evangelicals were leading the way, proudly marching towards hegemonized stupidity, but kind of, you know, running into each other and falling down, and his shoes aren't tied and shit.
Like chickens proudly marching to the KFC factory.
Right.
It's okay to be stupid, you know, but like everybody can't be tall. Everybody can't be smart. But when all the smartest chickens do shitloads of research on KFC and show you videos of the Fargo chipper in action, like, you halt the fucking chicken procession. Like, wow.
Well, right, but this study casts a lot of doubt on any analogy that assumes evangelicals have intelligence equal to that of a chicken. So the numbers here. They looked at four key scientific facts and asked people if they were confident that these demonstrable, unambiguous, again, facts were true. More than three-quarters of evangelicals expressed doubt in the Big Bang and evolution, with more than half of them doubting anthropogenic climate change, of course, and the established age of the Earth.
Seriously? We finally have actual evidence suggesting a flood's going to happen, and the Christians are denying it this time?
Yeah.
Get on board! The Ark, bitches! And in Wilesy Coyote ugly news, conservative North Carolina Senate candidate Steve Wiles, whilst campaigning on the gay marriage ban platform, was recently outed as a former drag queen MC at a Winston-Salem gay bar, performing under the stage name, wait for it, Miss Mona Sinclair.
That sounds sexy.
There's not even a pun in that.
Right,
fuck,
right.
We'll
you could have done
that.
Better. Like my favorite part of the story, by the way, is that when they asked the staunchly anti-gay rights candidate if he himself was gay, he said, yeah. And I quote,
not know.
Yeah, exactly. He says, I really won't make any comment on that right now. So I guess he dodged the bullet there. They almost had him.
Close one. So after being fired from his slash her job as a promoter for the 2011 Miss Gay America pageant for, quote, conduct unbecoming to the organization, it seems Wiles decided he slash she was better suited to perform conduct unbecoming to a politician and ran for office. Now, obviously, we've already got 30 seconds on the clock for this one.
Obviously.
I decided to go with Republican drag queen bar names. Go.
All right. Excellent. Forged Bush.
Nice.
Tucked the dick in and forged just a bush where it was.
The GOP spot.
Oh, nice, nice. I was going to say the trans old party, but yours is better. I'll give you that one.
What about Santorum and Coke?
I don't mind admitting that place always gives me a banner.
The Coke always ruins my banner, but makes it much
how about cocaine jokes? How about Gippers and Strippers? It'd be the home of trickle-down-your-back economics.
Nice. What about Ted's Gay Cruise?
Oh, excellent. Colin Powell?
Pow.
Just pow. Right, colon.
Tap that Ashcroft. Back that Ashcroft up.
How about Chris equals Christie? Great place to get your tunnel jammed, as I understand it. Narrows it down to one lane. And
what about entrance in the back Tucker Carlson's?
So all kind of shit going on there. Well done. Oh, dude, we missed the obvious one. The LGBT party.
Obviously, nice. Adam's Applebee's?
And finally, tonight in Holocaust of Living News, a high school in Rialto, California learned the stupid way that you shouldn't assign kids to write a paper entitled, Did the Holocaust Really Happen?
Seriously? This happened.
Eighth grade students in the school were asked to do some research and write a paper explaining whether they believe the Holocaust was A, the Holocaust, or B, and these are not my words, by the way, a political scheme concocted to influence public emotion.
Now, if I remember high school correctly, that means I could have gotten an A on a Holocaust denial essay as long as I used transition words like moreover and
right.
Somewhere included the phrase encompassing a wide swath of cultural mores. That would do it.
Somewhere between
That's
the Tigris and the Euphrates.
A Holocaust denial essay.
Now, I should point out that I don't think that this topic should be off the table for discussion or anything. I know it's against the law in some places where this podcast is listened to, so fuck your laws. But if somebody wants to research the historical evidence on this one, I invite them to because the historical evidence is fucking overwhelming. I mean, there's videos and shit. Just like, what else happened to all the fucking Jews? We have these censuses before the Holocaust, and there's all these Jews, and then there's now, and there's not those Jews anymore. So sure, look into it. Start with some of Michael Shermer's excellent work on the subject, but don't make a fucking history assignment out of it. And especially don't do that, and I don't give a shit if this is unrelated, but especially don't do it if the superintendent of the school is sporting the I shit you not name of Mohammed Z. Islam.
That's actually also the number two answer when Family Feud asked 100 Texans to name the president of the United States. And the number one answer? George Bush. That's right.
Anyway, after fucking duh complaints from the Anti-Defamation League, a number of other groups, and most of the parents that weren't assholes, the school apologized and scrapped the paper. I believe they replaced it with something a little less controversial. It was a sociology assignment entitled The Blacks. Do they really love them some cornbread?
Rape. Legitimate gripe or a desperate bid for attention? You decide, 13-year-olds.
Right, no. Yes.
Great idea.
Well, I guess now that we got the rape joke out of the way, we can close up headlines tonight. Heath, thanks as always for joining me.
If they downloaded our podcast, though, they were asking for it. I'm just saying.
God, dude.
Come on.
All right. And when we come back, Lucinda will be here to make excuses for not reading all the way through Psalms.
The Holy Babble.
Holy shit. Which was, I believe, the working title for Psalms.
Yeah, they also kicked around Better Off Dead Poets Society.
Nice, nice. Now, we had the supreme displeasure this week of reading by far the longest book of the Bible, and the only task less desirable than reading this shit was figuring out a way to break it down in a 10-minute segment. Now, not only is this book way too long for a meaningful overview, it's also just a random anthology of needy, whining Jews. There's no story to talk about. Well, I mean, but at least there's story here, and this is just a collection of crappy and often cadaverous prayers about random shit. Yeah. So, joining us to find a way to puzzle this sucker out is my lovely wife, Lucinda. Lucinda, welcome back.
Good to be back. I've missed me.
As have I. So, to give this discussion some kind of structure, we're going to look at the, you know, not the individual Psalms, but rather the five sections within the book. So, Lucinda, why don't you start us off with part one?
So basically, you have two types of psalms right off the bat. They're either saying, hey, you can tell how glorious God is because everything is going right for us. Mm-hmm. Or they're saying, I know things aren't going right for us, but that doesn't mean that God's not glorious.
Right. Yeah.
One or the other.
And weird little thing, they point out that good Christians are always prosperous because their parents own valuable coastal property.
Right.
So choose your parents wisely, people.
Good advice.
And then there's a bunch of my God could beat up your God and dear God, don't let anybody fuck me in my sleep. You know, there's all kinds of shit for the next 150 chapters or so.
Right. Interspersed with some serious shit talk about atheists here and there.
Yes. Yeah. Apparently we're cannibals and do only wicked acts.
Yes. So Psalm 18, that was a weird one. It's like a mile and a half longer than any of the other ones, which kind of pissed me off at first. But then it turned out it was basically a scene where God kills a bunch of ninjas, so it turned out I didn't mind so much.
I like 22, which I call the prayer of the pants nerd.
Right. Right before the whole Lord is my shepherd bit, we get this whole, my mom says you guys only persecute me because you're jealous, Psalm. That one was fun.
Yeah. And then in Psalms 35, we get the prayer of the roadrunner. It's all about my enemies getting caught in their own nets and accidentally strapping themselves to their own Agni rockets and fucking themselves all up.
And God made the law of gravity, and the coyote saw it, and the coyote fell, and it was good for the roadrunner.
Now then we get to part two, and I think it's worth noting that, like, there's nothing that divides book one from book two except a header that says book two. There's no substantive difference between the contents of either of these books, you know.
Right. The Psalms continue to basically fall into two themes. A, our enemies just got their asses kicked. How about God, huh? And B, our enemies just kicked our asses. So what the hell?
Right.
Is that what you guys were getting? I swear at a certain point I was just reading Godi God, God God, God God, Salah.
No, I had that part too.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some of that. But there was also like a lot of backhanded praise. You know, a lot of like, God, I know it seems like you're fucking up all the godding and stuff, but we trust you. We trust you. We know better.
And then there's all the flattering, obsequious, I sure hope God fucks my daughter stuff.
Right.
God, 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 Dad, Daddy, Yahweh, Hashem, Lois. Are you watching? Are you looking? Are you, you miss it. You miss it. I'm being pious. Sing it more.
I also giggled at Psalm 47, which is basically the biblical version of the hokey pokey where they clap their hands and turn about.
Right, and we got to call them out on this one. Psalm 53, basically identical to Psalm 14. They were hoping we wouldn't notice, but we did.
Yeah.
Two different rabbi school kids copied off each other, clearly. Probably not a coincidence that they doubled up on the psalm that talked shit about atheists, though. Literally
right.
claims that every single atheist is evil. So
yes.
All babies are evil.
I always got that impression.
A lot of justifications for racism and genocide, too.
Yeah.
I mean, in Psalm 58, 60, 63, 68, basically all of the ones that aren't telling us how massive God's dick is.
Right.
Really.
Yeah, 58 was particularly egregious. I believe that was the one where you ask God to rip out the teeth of your enemy's children.
What?
Yeah. Oh, or at least make sure nobody's allowed to provide them with affordable medical coverage. That's
right, at the very
incantation of that one.
I wanted to point this one out, too, by the way, because I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure that in 74:11, God says he can't help the Israelites because he's busy fondling his own tits. Or he's whacking off or something. The
That's
hand is
I
in the
it.
Garment. Yeah.
If I remember correctly, and I rarely do, in King James, God was giving himself a rusty trombone. I think that's what it was officially
that's what they
translations
it.
In the various books.
He's very
yeah.
flexible, not repressed at all. But here and there, you'll come across a nugget of gold. Like verse 81:10, where God says to the Jews, open your mouths and I shall fill them. And then starts talking about them sucking up his dripping honey. I mean, we're all adults here. You hear milk and honey, you think arcing ropes of jism. I mean, God made us this way. That's what you guys think of too, right?
And then there's book 4, which is just more kissing of the holy holy.
And these fucking poems. When did the Bible turn into a recently dumped high school girl?
You want to read some of my poems? No, of course I fucking don't.
But at least teenage girl poems have some important themes, like slitting your wrists or getting finger fucked. These ones are all about how Jews are invincible and God is such a snappy dresser. Poor shit.
So moving on anyway, we get another generous helping of, hey, God, did you notice how much more moral I'm being than everybody else? They could probably use a good smiting.
Yeah, and I thought Psalm 96 was an interesting one. It basically says that God is great and he knows everything, but we still have to remind him how awesome he is constantly.
Right.
Yeah, and in the following Psalm, I believe we learn that if you have the right Pokeball, God can breathe fire. So that's a pretty cool trick, I guess.
But perhaps my favorite of all of them was Psalm 101, which says, and again, paraphrasing here, but it basically says, God is peace and love and justice, and I'll kill any motherfucker who disagrees.
Yep.
And you thought the Muslims made that shit up. Just another Jewish cover band, just like the Christians, same old shit.
And then finally we get to part 5, and if you know, you've been through so much at this point that you think, oh, part 5, that's of 5, it's almost over. But you forget that part 5 of this book is almost as long as Exodus.
And it starts off right with a psalm that reminds us that if you starve or rot in prison or get sick and die or drown, it's all because God hates you and you're evil.
Right. Yes.
You know?
We keep getting all these mixed messages, too. Like look at Psalm 111. It tells us that the Lord is forgiving and trustworthy and infinitely just, and because of that, we should be scared shitless of him? What?
Right?
That's
something of a running theme in this book.
Yeah, but Psalms also has my favorite thing in the Bible so far, the middle. Psalm 118 is the midway point, so we're definitely getting somewhere at least. There is an end in sight eventually.
Ah, we can't fucking swim back. It would just be
no,
stupid.
No, not anymore. Now, I think it's interesting that in Psalm 122, they specifically call for peace in Jerusalem. So how's that working out for you, even?
Right.
Praying for that, friend. It's the only city that's mentioned by name. Must be the most peaceful city in the world by now, huh? Or you'd have given up on this praying shit.
Also, was it just me, or was there a ton of thanking God for the wrong shit? Like,
right.
Like in 126, they thank God for no longer requiring them to be enslaved.
Right.
What? Yeah.
Thanks for not fucking me in the ass between each pump. That's great. Do that.
Half
you know,
the
don't
time, you're
also
not
stick your
thrusting.
Finger in there in between. That's wonderful.
Good on you. Yeah. Or 135, which basically says, as evidence of God's infinite compassion, I submit the following list of people he's killed.
Right. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And that leads us to the most notorious of all Psalms. I think we have to talk about number 137.
Which essentially says, if a foreigner asks you to sing them a psalm, you refuse. Because
yes.
Non-Jews can't hear psalms. They can listen to them, but they can't hear psalms. They're like Jimi Hendrix, apparently.
Dude had a white drummer. Anyway, it's...
The whole band's white.
I like this psalm, though, because it shows you that Jewish foresight, right? So if you ever get captured by an enemy who forces you to sing a song, you have a ready song about how you don't want to sing songs for people who capture you and make you sing songs, and then you're going to eventually smash their children's skulls with rocks. I mean, that's just it's just prudent to have that one thought out.
Not many songs about smashing baby skulls these days, really.
No, it's a bit of a lost art.
Yeah.
It probably hit its high water mark in Psalm 137.
So then we get a bunch more of, have you ever met a starving kid in Africa? Bunch of assholes. Quit blaming God type psalms.
Yeah.
And then it draws to an overdue but merciful close.
Yes. Thank you, Jeebus.
And thus ends the longest book in the Bible and the only legitimate competitor to Vogon poetry. Next up is Proverbs. Whoever gets that's going to love it. And then, anyway, we got Proverbs coming up. It's still stupid long, but it's going to seem like a cakewalk compared to Psalms after this.
Getting baptized by Sarah Palin would seem like a cakewalk after Psalms. Are you kidding me? Shit.
Topical.
Joke. Wow.
Me.
No Bible for the next 3 weeks. Between now and then, I'm going to just, read Billy Collins until my eyes hurt. Thanks for soldiering through it, guys. Halfway and then some.
Only halfway.
Halftime score, Jews 1, Christians and Muslims 0. So we'll get back from the break and see what happens.
Before we settle the tab tonight, I wanted to throw a huge thanks out to all the listeners that made it out to ReasonCon last weekend. It was our first chance to actually hang out with our audience, and it turns out that we've got a very awesome audience. Thanks so much for making it an unforgettable weekend. There's way too many people to thank by name, and I'd probably fuck up and leave somebody out. So just in general, thanks a ton. It really meant the world to us that so many of you were able to make it out. Obviously, I need to thank Bobby C. from the No Religion Required podcast for providing this week's Farnsworth quote, and I hate to admit that I still haven't had a chance to check out his show, but I will definitely be rectifying that today, and with good reason. While we were at ReasonCon, he caught some audio that was either one of the greatest moments in atheist podcasting history, or we were just all so shit-faced by them we thought it was. But one way or the other, should be really funny. It started off as a few minutes with Heath and Cash and Love and I, and then it turned into several hours with us and Bill from Barroom Atheist and Tracy Harris from The Atheist Experience and Richard Carrier and The Year Without God Pastor Ryan Bell, along with a dozen or so other hilarious drunken atheists. I'm not sure how good the audio quality is going to be, but even if it's just remotely good, it's worth your time checking it out. If nothing else, it includes Heath and Cash competing for the most off-color abortion joke. So that should be enough to get you there. Speaking of Heath, need to thank him one more time for everything he does on and off the air. I need to thank Lucinda for toughing it out all the way through Psalms. But most of all, of course, we need to thank this week's most honorable hominids, Robert, Andrew, John, Mark, Kilburn State Records, Shane, Eric with a C, robives.com, Don, Daniel, Jonathan, Robert, Nicholas, Scott, Liam, Eric with a K, and Steven. Robert, Andrew, John, and Mark, whose erections give railroad crossing arms feelings of inadequacy, Kilburn State Records and robives.com, which would have made the list if it was the Fortune 502, Shane, Eric with a C, Don and Daniel, whose archery skills are just too much for even the nimblest of neutrinos, Jonathan, Robert, and Nicholas, who aren't the droids you're looking for, and Scott, Liam, Eric with a K, and Steven, who make Mother Teresa look like a miserable bitch, and not just because Mother Teresa really was a miserable bitch. These 17 people and companies, which, according to some Republicans, are people as well, have helped secure the sanity of coming generations this week by giving us money. Giving us money is a noble, selfless pursuit that was often used as a test of bravery by Native American tribes. It also inoculates against alien abduction, witchcraft, and the stupid thing where people think that Wi-Fi is nuking their brains. It also helps keep us doing the show. If you donate at patreon.com/scathingatheist, for as little as $1 per episode, you can get extended cuts of each episode before the show's available to the general public, and for as little as more than $1 an episode, you can get other bonus shit as well, so definitely check that out. You can also support us with a one-time donation by clicking the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com, or by picking up a copy of our new book, Diatribes, Volume 1, 50 Essays from a Godless Misanthrope, which is available on Amazon, the Kindle Store, and other fine ebook retailers. And if you'd like to support the show, but we can go fuck ourselves if we think we're getting any of your hard-earned money, you can also help us a ton by leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you like to leave 5-star reviews. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you can find all the contact info on the contact page page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. Just last year.
If they're gonna
there's hardly any Catholics left. Sorry.